Welcome to Enduring Grief, Healing Practices and True Stories of Living After Loss, where we dive into real, honest conversations about the journey through grief and the support that makes it possible. I'm Sarah Peterson, an LCSW, and in this space, I bring my experience as someone who has walked this path, as well as my work with my nonprofit, Clear Morning. I'm often joined by two incredible guests, Dr. Marla Speyer and Dr. Dean Sharp, both incredible people and physicians who've spent their lives caring for people and have supported me personally on my journey through grief. In our first episode, I'll share my personal story and how I've come to this work, why it matters so deeply to me, and how it might resonate with you. Whether you're navigating your own loss or standing by someone who is, this space is for you. Join me as we uncover the stories, the struggles, and the hope that lead to healing. Let's walk through this journey together. Welcome back, everybody, to our next episode. I am just so thrilled. I mean, really, truly, I was just telling our guest that this is a bucket list career moment for me because she is such a special person in this world. And I just feel so honored that she's carved out time for us to do this together. We have Brennan Wood with us today, and she is the executive director of the Dougie Center here in Portland. Brennan, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me and for those kind words. That truly means so much to me.
Oh my gosh, no, I'm a super fan. I've watched a video. I've read all about you. I know that this is such a gift to our audience to have you giving us this sort of, I don't know, one-on-one attention and description of how important and the type of work that the Dougie Center does and based on your own experience.
Yeah, well, I'm so happy to share my own experience and to share what I've learned from working at Dougie Center for over 20 years now.
Oh my gosh. But you're only, what, like 25? You look like you're 25. How can that be?
Well, thank you. Yes, I started when I was 5.
There we go. Good. It's been a long road, right?
Exactly.
So for our audience, we've got people all over the country. What would you want them to know about the Dougie Center?
So Dougie Center was the first of its kind in the country. And what we provide is grief support in a safe place for children and families before and after a death. So what that really means is that we bring families together based on their shared experience of having a family member either with an advanced serious illness or who has died.
Wow. So I know that hospices sometimes do that. What makes you guys different than the typical hospice? Because I know, you know, I was a hospice social worker for a long time and we would have to follow families for 13 months after a death. What makes you guys different?
Absolutely. Well, first, let me say that I'm so grateful for what hospice does in this world. And I think it's so important and we need more of it and much, much sooner for families. What I would say that we do differently is really we have a robust program for children and we start as young as 3. And I'm certain that there are some hospices that provide a similar type of support. But what we have found is that really what we do is significantly different in that we start early for the youngest grievers, and our program is ongoing. There's no beginning and no end. Kids and families can stay in our program as long as they need our services. Often hospices provide, again, much needed and great support, but what we have found is it's often a 6-week program or an 8-week program, and we believe that grief is longer than that.
Are you saying grief lasts forever?
That is exactly what I'm saying.
Yes, I think you're onto something there.
I think I am.
I love that because so often these resources, like you said, which are so important and valuable and all the things, but there is a limit to what they can provide because oftentimes they're doing 10 other things at minimum. And so to focus exclusively on grief is really hard. And the part about our culture is that we're fighting this idea that there's a start and an end to the grief process.
Absolutely. And as much as Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's 5 Stages of Grief were so profound when she wrote them for people who were dying.
Thank you for that. Right? Thank you for that. I'm always the anal person that's like, you know, that was for the people who were dying.
Right. I mean, that's what they were made for and intended for. That's what they are. What it has done, unfortunately, is in a lot of ways a disservice to those left behind in that there's this idea that we can check off 5 boxes and be done with grief when really grief is something that is a part of your fabric and your journey for the rest of your life when you experience profound loss.
Yeah. I always tell people, and maybe as a listener, you've heard me say this before, but it's basically learning to live in this reality in the most meaningful way. And this reality has to include the wound, the loss, the grief. And in the most meaningful way means that some days I'm not doing so hot, other days I'm thriving, and that's okay too, because the most meaningful way is always evolving.
Absolutely. And I think in earlier loss, certainly those moments can actually be as challenging as the harder moments because you feel like you shouldn't be thriving. You feel guilty. You feel like you should only be sad, but grief, it isn't singular. It isn't linear. It isn't this one pathway, this one experience. It's unfortunately or fortunately, you know, all over the place. And it's messy because being human is messy.
It's true. It's true. And so, I mean, the mission of Clear Mourning, my nonprofit, is to shift the culture of grief through support, innovation, and awareness. And I think we are in agreement that that starts with kids because that is the future of the culture. And so being able to tap into that population through this type of support must just, I mean, you must watch it evolve for them.
Absolutely. And it is amazing to see the positive impact that Dougie Center has on kids and families and certainly on me through my own experience. What I will also share, and I think it's critical that people know this because I do think that grief, especially early loss, should be and is a public health priority right now for us as a country and really as a world. Kids who have a parent die in childhood have higher levels of things that we as a community, as a world, want to avoid. They do experience higher levels of anxiety, depression, substance misuse into adulthood. They have even been found to have earlier mortality rates than their non-bereaved counterparts. And that's huge, right? So a kid who has a parent die in childhood has statistically significant higher levels of all of those things that we want to avoid. So Dougie Center is really a preventative model for kids and families. And what we see in our outcomes is amazing and profound and really important.
Wow. Tell us, what is your personal experience? How did you end up here?
Yeah. So my mom, Doris, died 3 days after my 12th birthday.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. In my family, you know, we were a very young family. She was 36 when she died. My dad was 38. It was 1987. And I was the youngest of her three children. I have an older sister who was 3 years older than me, 15 when she died. And my brother was 17 when she died. And my parents did not have the tools to navigate her illness or her death. And being the youngest, that was just so challenging for me. It obviously had implications for all of us as siblings. I'm not trying to say that my road was harder by any stretch, but because I was younger, I was a little bit more just stuck in our home environment where my brother and sister could kind of more easily escape the chaos, which, of course, you know, for all of us, that has its ramifications, right? And so luckily, I kind of threw a temper tantrum, honestly, Sarah.
Well, good for you. Well, you were the winner of sadness in that time, right?
Right? Yes.
We use a lot of humor on this podcast, Brennan.
Which is so important. Okay. I use a lot of humor all the time.
Tell us about your tantrum.
Yeah. So my dad really tried to kind of move quickly into the next relationship to fill the void or series of, you know, he was really kind of on the out in the world trying to find something to fill that space for him. And that left me home a lot alone. And I remember one evening he came home and I was standing in the kitchen and I just kind of let him have it. Mm. And he kept saying, "You're fine. It's fine. You're going to be fine." And I remember just looking at him and saying, "What if I'm not?
Oh my gosh.
No, what are you going to do about it?" And he said, "I heard about this place called the Dougie Center. I have no idea what they do, but do you want to go?" And I remember it clear as day. I mean, I remember where I was standing. I remember what he said. And I said, yes, you know, that yes. Ended up at the Dougie Center a short time later. And not only for me, you know, the impact of being with other kids who had also had a parent die was huge. At school, I was the only kid that I knew of that was in that experience. Obviously, I had a range of responses and some friends really. There were a few friends that were great. A lot of friends really weren't. And also the adults in my life really wanted to take my pain away. And I understand that. That's a normal response to want to help a kid. But what they didn't understand is that, you know, in trying to take my pain away, that was actually really invalidating my experience and my grief and pushing me to move on when really what I needed to do was experience it and feel it. And so luckily, I got to go to the Dougie Center, where I was surrounded by kids, but also adults who held the space for that. And there wasn't pressure to forget or move on or be anywhere other than where I was. And that for me was everything. It changed everything for me. I say this often, but truly my experience at the Dougie Center, I believe, was life-changing, life-saving. I might still be alive. It would look entirely different right. If I hadn't gone there. And for me, learning kind of that, the tools that I learned, but also that idea that this is a natural, normal, healthy process. And when hard things happen, we can go through them. And also when hard things happen, we're not alone, right? So for me, that was everything. When I decided it was time to close from the program, because that's up to kids and teens and even, you know, young adults. And then we also provide support for the adult caregiver. When the family decides it's time to close, we do kind of a closing ritual. And then for me, I knew my time at Dougie Center wasn't over. So I went back and went through the volunteer training and began volunteering and volunteered until I was about 19 and I decided to leave Portland. I was gone for about a decade. And then I moved back over 20 years ago, almost 21 years ago, to work at the Dougie Center. They wow. didn't know it yet, but that is why I moved back to Portland.
The stars came together. Yes. So you were back here for this.
Yeah. And about 2 weeks after I came back, a friend called me kind of screaming into the phone, the Dougie Center's hiring.
Oh my God.
And so it all just really worked out. And I've been on staff for 20 years and executive director for almost 10.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's just so incredible. What a mission in life.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So I have this feeling sometimes, I don't know, maybe you do. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm doing all this great work. I've got this podcast. I love it so much. I'm teaching these workshops. It feels so good. And then I pause and I'm like, how the hell is this my life?
Yes.
You know, the only reason all of these things are like this is because I've suffered tremendous loss. Damn it. Do you ever have those moments?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Weird thing. It is. To hold both.
Oh, it's such a weird thing. And I think what you just said, holding both, is so true, right? Like, we hold multiple things at once, and sometimes they're diametric opposites, and they all are true at the same time, right? And I think that for me, this is how this path, this journey, is because my mother lived, but it's also because my mother died. And yeah. both of those things are true and hard and beautiful and all the things, right? And so it's wild. I do have those moments often where I'm like, wow, it's a journey.
Like maybe at the TEDx talk, did you have a moment up there?
Yeah, that is a pretty wild full circle thing. And certainly, you know, I mean, some of the things that I've even said so far resonate with what I shared during that talk. But yeah, it is truly wild to be in a space to share so publicly about something that's so personal, but so important to share so that others know that they're not alone.
Totally.
It's so important. And the same reason you're doing this podcast and the work that you do, right? It's just, yeah. It's so important that others see the other. I don't want to say the other side of it, because I don't think there's like another side of it. But one of the analogies that I often use is like, when you're first grieving, you're kind of in the ocean in the storm, right? And waves are crashing over you. And it's happening all the time, all at once. And sometimes you feel like you can barely come up for air. And for me, over time, the storm has lessened and I learned how to swim with the current. And then it's like over time, you're on the shore, right? And the waves are still lapping at your ankles and you still feel them and you still know it's there. And every once in a while, there's that sneaker wave that comes out of nowhere and you say, gosh, why am I crying, missing my mom 37 years later, right? But my thing is like, I want to be the person standing on the shore holding the lantern.
Oh. And girl, we are cut from the same cloth. Like, I use that analogy all the time.
Do you really?
Oh my gosh. I'm like, you know, the first part of grief, it's like you've all seen everybody get in the ocean for the first time and you watch them lose their swimsuit and a face full of sand and they don't know which way is up and they're totally panicked and they think they might die. And then over time, you learn that the waves come in sets and that you can actually turn to the side. You can actually dip under if it's not the right time. You can stay on the shore altogether.
Yeah.
We use the same stuff.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
That's
I must whisper too.
Well, I feel like there's so many people in this life that we learn from. Right?
No, it's true. Yeah. And that was the only way that I could ever really to offer hope. That's not like, don't worry.
Right.
You're going to be okay.
Right.
But that you will learn how to be in this relationship. I'm always like, grief is the relationship you now have with the person.
Yeah.
And like any new relationship, even though I know it's not new and it's not the one you want.
Right.
For lack of a better way to describe it, any new relationship takes investigation, intention.
Yeah.
And boundaries.
Absolutely.
Like I can't do this today. I'm dipping under the wave.
Yeah.
I can't do this today.
Oh, I love
because
that.
All these other parts of my life are calling me, or because for whatever reason, you know? And
yeah.
I know in the beginning, those choices don't feel available.
Absolutely.
Ever.
Yeah.
But if we can let grievers know that those choices might be marching toward them, I always say, like, if what I'm saying makes you want to punch me in the face, that's okay.
Yeah.
I just want you to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think what you said about the relationship aspect of things is so important, because one of the things that I think our culture does in this idea that we have to move on and forget and just like march forward so quickly is that what we're forgetting about is the relationship. We are still in relationship with the people who died. The relationship has changed, right? But my mom is truly the only biological mom I'm ever going to have. And I get to have a relationship with her. I get to keep that. No one gets to say to me, you have to cut that off. Why? What about that feels better for society than maintaining connection, maintaining relationship, thinking about my mom? I get to do all of that. I get to carry her with me. And to me, that is just such a healthier, softer, more gentle way to live than telling people that they just need to forget and move on.
I mean, I just cringe at those generations where the pictures weren't even allowed in the house and you were not to speak their name. And I know that there are cultures now who still subscribe to that sort of philosophy.
Right.
And I'm not trying to diss anybody's culture. I'm saying for me and the way that I grieved and have watched and helped people grieve, to live in a place where you were not allowed to speak the person's name would feel so terrible.
Like, yes.
I just think it would complicate the process so profoundly.
Yeah. And I do honor, I truly believe that there is no right or wrong way to grieve. Oh. As long as people are staying safe and keeping Absolutely. Those around them safe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then there's no right or wrong way to grieve. So I certainly don't want to. I'm with you on that. However, I do think that there is this idea that forcing that on other people, including children, right, is not the best way. Giving kids options, giving people options on how they want to engage with their grief and with others and honor the person in their life or the people in their life who are gone is so important.
Yeah. And how do you guys navigate it when, I think this probably comes up a lot, I know it did in my house, my son didn't want to engage in his grief process some of the time because he knew it would upset me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to protect me and trying to protect this person. You know, his therapist recently said to me, my God, Sarah, all this kid has done is shapeshift to keep people okay.
Yeah.
Because that's all he's known. I mean, he was 7 when my daughter died. So he has just continually shapeshifted himself to take care of other people.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that we could have done it differently so that didn't happen for him. But I do see this unfolding for youth a lot where they withhold their own in their safest environment because they don't want to upset their adult caregiver.
Absolutely. It does happen all the time. And of course, I think there's things that adults can do to try to help that. But ultimately, that does happen. And I think for me, what I go back to is I think that's one of the most powerful things about peer support. Because at Dougie Center, and there are many programs based on the Dougie Center model, inspired by the Dougie Center model across the country and around the world, there's a National Alliance for Children's Grief. And if people can't find a program based on the Dougie Center model in their area, there's also summer camps that are grief summer camps. And I think what is so important about that is that kids get to go into those environments and their person who brings them, right? Whether that's a surviving parent, whether that's a parent who, you know, also had a child die, if it's their sibling, that parent gets support also. And they're in another location at Dougie Center. So we have an adult talking room. We have multiple adult talking rooms where the adults get to go and provide support to one another. And then the kids are with other kids. So a typical group at Dougie Center is about 15 kids who are divided by age and who died and often even how they died to give kids that sense of normalcy that they aren't the only kid in the world that this has happened to. And then they're run by a Dougie Center staff person who has at least a master's level education. And then there's a lot of adult volunteers. So there's this real safe container to express all of those things that they maybe can't express it or won't, right?
So what I hear you saying is that this withdrawal of emotional release from kids is probably pretty normal.
Absolutely.
In the home environment for various reasons. And so as a parent, as an adult caregiver, as somebody who cares for this kid, to find those outlets where they can release or just be or simply understand that they're not alone is everything.
Absolutely. I think that that is everything. And I think that that is something that we can strive to provide for kids, but also for one another in community. And I think for me, that was critical. And I know a lot of folks seek out therapy, and I am not anti-therapy. In fact, I'm a huge proponent of therapy. But I think often what's missing from therapy for children and families who are grieving is just that peer support, that understanding that there are other kids going through this. And also, I think really grounding in the fact that grief is a natural, normal, healthy response to loss.
Right.
That we are human and therefore we grieve. It is not mental illness. There is nothing wrong with you if you are grieving. I speak of this in my TED Talk, but I believe that we are in a time when many are trying to pathologize grief because I think it's easier to think that there's a fix, that there's a cure, that you can move on from it in a certain time frame. I think that that can be an easier way to think about it. But the reality is that grief is this human experience. Mm-hmm. And it isn't this clearly delineated time frame, right?
Right.
And so I think that getting kids support around that is critical.
Yeah. What do you think of the DSM, prolonged grief disorder diagnosis?
Well, what I would say is that I think that, first of all, I would say.
All right, she took a deep breath, everybody. Get ready, something big's coming.
I think it's very unfortunate because kids can be diagnosed with prolonged grief disorder if they are still yearning for their parent who died just 6 months after their death.
I mean, that's insane.
And 6 months is nothing.
Nothing.
6 months is nothing. And if a kid isn't yearning for their parent who died 6 months after their death, I feel like there are things to look at there, right? And so I think it's very unfortunate to give mental health professionals the idea that grief is mental illness.
Yeah, that it's a disorder.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And up until this edition of the DSM, that wasn't the case. And there was this understanding that grief is what it is, that it is this all-encompassing, intense experience. And so I do think it's really unfortunate. I understand that there are people who say that it's important to be able to bill insurance and all of that. And I think that there are ways that we have done that for many, many, many years.
Since the beginning of the whole insurance business.
Yep. Since the beginning, there's ways we've done it differently. And I don't think it is a helpful thing in our society to start putting out there that grief is an illness to be cured.
Yeah, I agree. Couldn't agree more. It's not a disorder. It's a response to a tragedy in somebody's life.
Yes. Hmm. Yeah, I have said to many folks, like, there's nothing wrong with what you're experiencing. There's something wrong with what happened.
Right.
Right? Something terrible happened and you're having a normal response to it.
Mm-hmm. And going back a little bit, Brennan, do you remember as a 12-year-old feeling guilty for laughing and that sort of thing, as we talked about a little while ago?
Yeah, I think that for me, everything was just so out of sorts. And I felt this pressure to like do everything right, which meant also laughing. You know, like I felt this pressure to just be quote unquote normal.
To be back
right?
to normal.
To be back to normal as quickly as possible. And so I don't know that I remember distinctly thinking, oh, I shouldn't laugh or I shouldn't have fun, but probably not too much fun, probably not too much laughter. Like I felt very like I had to do it the right way and I had to perform for all of the people around me.
Oh my God, you must have been so tired.
I definitely was. I mean, I went back to school 2 weeks. My mom died 2 weeks before school started. And so I started school 7th grade right on time. I ended up being the 7th grade, I think it was the vice president or whatever the 7th grader was for the student council. And, you know, I did all these things to just like make sure that I did everything right. And then it was really Dougie Center that allowed me to share the real of what I was experiencing and going through.
It's amazing.
And that saved me.
You know, I run a grief camp, Courage. And before I took it over, one of our local hospices ran it for years. And so after the loss of my daughter and my dad, my son went to the camp and he went to mountain bike camp and he went to sleepaway fun camp. And at the end of the last few summers that he was there, he's like, no, my favorite is Camp Courage. And I'm like, wow, that says a lot that grief camp is your favorite. I said, why? He goes, just like what you said, it's the only time in the year that I'm not the weirdo who lost his sister.
Yes.
And for him to be able to set that story down for the 3.5 days or whatever it was, that's it.
Yeah.
That's what he needed. I don't think take away these incredible tools for coping and stress management and moving through Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages of grief. I think he felt community. And to know that there is community sometimes is the most transformative thing.
Absolutely. I was talking to a little boy at the Dougie Center, and his family had agreed to be, you know, kind of a family that we shared their story publicly. Obviously, we honor confidentiality, but this family wanted to share their story so that people could know about the impact of Dougie Center. And I was speaking to him. He was 10 at the time, and he was incredibly articulate. And I asked him, I said, why Dougie Center? You play sports, you have friends, you've shared all that with me. You've been coming for a couple of years. And why do you keep coming back? And he said, he thought about it. He was just so thoughtful. And he looked at me and he said, you know, when I'm with my friends and I'm on playing sports on whatever team I'm on, I don't know which of my friends knows that my dad died. Mm. I don't know which of my friends knows how he died, which was a pretty traumatic experience. And so I just always feel a little awkward. And that was the word he used. I just always feel awkward. And he said, but I come to Dougie Center and I get to just hang out with friends and play basketball and shoot hoops and do art and anything else I feel like doing. And while I'm here, I know that all the kids I'm hanging out with know that my dad died, and I know they know how he died, and they've all had somebody die. And so for that time, I don't have to feel awkward. I just feel normal.
What a gift.
Yeah. And I thought to myself, you know, if that's all we do, and I know we do more than that, which is wonderful, but if that's all we do for kids, if twice a month for an hour and a half, they get to come to a place where they feel normal, that's amazing.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Because what that does is it cultivates that part of their brain that says, hey, this is possible for me.
Mm-hmm.
This is possible for me. In a time when it's really easy to think that very few things are possible.
Absolutely. I had a teen say to me one time, going back to the idea of laughter, she said to me that her first Dougie Center group, what the most profound experience was for her was that she learned that she would laugh again and that her family would laugh again.
Oh.
Because she walked in the doors of Dougie Center and she heard laughter. And she was like, what is this? Like, she was not expecting that. And she was in her teen group and everyone was laughing. And she said she just sat there and she was so happy to learn that she would laugh again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, just even as adults, I'll have a lot of grievers, especially bereaved parents, come in and be clients of mine. And sometimes I think they're just clocking me the whole time to see if I act normal. Like, is this possible for me? Am I ever going to get to that place? And I don't know if they will get to where I am, but everybody's path is different, is what
Absolutely.
I'm saying. But I do think there's this sense of, okay, she smiled, she talked, she's dressed, she's back to work. Maybe this is possible for me. And even in the darkest days at the beginning, when you really don't think that's true, like I say on the podcast here, is like, just hear it.
Yeah.
Or just see it.
Yeah.
Just know that that's out there somewhere.
At Dougie Center, the groups are set up where there's no beginning and no end to the group. So I mentioned that a six-week program, it's ongoing. But because of that, new kids join the group as kids leave the group. So you'll have a group of kids where some of them have been coming for 2 years, some a year, some 6 months, and some are very new to Dougie Center and often very new to having had somebody in their family die. And what is amazing then is that kids then end up being the helpers to one another. And that is just so profound. One of my kind of all-time favorite Dougie Center stories was a little boy came in when he was 3 and his dad had died. And we always give kids the opportunity to share their story, their name, their age, who died, and how they died at every group. And actually, that's kids, teens, young adults, and adult family members as well, right? We all have the option to share our story every time during opening circle. And this 3-year-old boy, it was his first time, and he said his name and his age, and he burst into tears, and he said, and my dad died, and I want him to come back. Mm. And one of the most beautiful, powerful things about a peer support group is that a 4-year-old boy across the room sat up and looked at him and said, when daddies die, they don't come back. And he you know, kind of shocked and looked at this boy and he said, but, you know, I want him to come back. And he was crying. And the 4-year-old stood up, walked across the room, sat down next to him, put his arm around him and said, I know, because my daddy died too. But when daddies die, they don't come back. And they sat there and cried together.
Oh, my gosh.
And what I love about that story, I mean, there's so many things I don't like about
of
that
course,
story, right? But what I do love about that story is that, you know, if an adult had said that to that 3-year-old boy, it almost sounds scolding.
Right.
It almost sounds like they've done something wrong. You know, well, when daddies die, they don't come back. But instead, this 4-year-old was able to offer that to his peer and really mentor him in his grief, right? As a peer. And they had that experience together. And how profound is that?
It's amazing. And I think it also touches on something you said earlier about just how I'll use the word advanced, grieving kids must be pushed to this advanced level of thinking and regulation and emotional synthesizing and all of the things that most kids without loss get to just sort of be oblivious to.
Yes.
I mean, for a four-year-old to come up with that, are you kidding me? It's just so clear. And so how, as adults, can we also remember that? Like, these are not your average kids who are thinking about average things. They have been thrusted into an experience that is well beyond their years.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, for
and
sure.
And give them the break to also then be like, and they don't have the cognitive tools.
Right.
To deal with all of this. How can we help them? And I think that your philosophy of this peer support is probably the primary and best way to do that.
I think it is.
Get them with other kids.
Yeah. I think it's so powerful. And of course, there are other tools and resources in the world and fully support those. But I just think the power of peer support, we have been able to really validate our model and validate what we're doing and show that it does beautiful things like increase hopefulness and self-worth, and perceived problems become easier and more bearable, right, for participants. So it really does, it's a preventative model that really helps kids and families.
Yeah. And I do think it's translatable to adults.
Oh, 100%.
Adults, I talk about this a lot where it's like, okay, Kobe Bryant dies. Tragic, sad. People pour into the streets to openly grieve. Why? Because there's this social permission to actually have a feeling.
Yeah.
But their loved one, their mother, their father, their whoever that they love and adore dies, and they're like stuck behind closed doors, not allowed to talk about it. 5 days bereavement, you're done.
Absolutely.
And it's insane.
Yes.
That it takes something like that, grieving somebody you've never met.
Yeah.
To feel permission to find that peer, that community grief support.
Like, right.
Actually, there's millions and millions of people who you could connect with.
Absolutely.
In a community like this, and it eases the way. It softens the edges.
Yeah, that is so interesting. I think one of the things about our program that's interesting is, so we provide support for 3 to 18. And with each of those support groups, there is an adult support group that happens simultaneously. So that the adult who brings them gets peer support at the same time. Then we also have a young adult program for 18 to 25 and then 26 to 40. And so we really provide support to all ages except 40 and over that don't have a child in the program. And that's where we also lean on our hospice programs, right, in the area to refer folks to. But one of the powerful, powerful parts of our program is the adult support. And I think that certainly we focus on the kids, and the kids are the entry into the program. But it's really interesting because we do have kids who say, well, I think I'm ready to close from Dougie Center, but I know that my mom isn't, or I know that my dad isn't, right? And so they keep coming because they want their parent to get the support that they're getting upstairs.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Which I think is so powerful.
It is so powerful. Oh gosh, I love what you guys do. So one question I had is, do you wish, or is there something out there where we could help? Like, on my website, I have the Grief Companion Manual. I hope that I can give this to supporters, because the other part about grief is that most of the people in the world supporting grievers don't have really much of an idea.
Yeah.
And I always say there's something different between choosing to do nothing and not knowing what to do. And if you don't know what to do, that's okay. Learn, try things out. And a lot of the things that I teach and work through are ways in which supporters can investigate how they can provide the most meaningful support. But how do we do that for kids and their peers?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I think it starts with all of us, right? And I think really one of the things that Dougie Center is a huge proponent of, and we have actually a campaign around, right? Like a
movement. Are you guys having a movement?
Yes.
I want that. I want you to start a movement.
We are.
Good.
We are. And it's, the hashtag is Understand Grief.
Okay. Hashtag Understand Grief.
Hashtag Understand Grief. And it's all based around our platform called Becoming Grief Informed. And it's actually a call to action. It's a pretty dense paper. And it is kind of a 40-page call to action, which definitely I think is geared a little bit more towards professionals. But we have other resources within that campaign for folks who aren't necessarily professionals providing mental health support. And it's based on the 10 core principles of grief-informed practice. And I think that there are ways that we can help so many people become grief-informed. And as a society, I think we've talked quite a bit about being trauma-informed. And I think people often know what it means, or closer to know what it means to be trauma-informed, and not necessarily know what it means to be grief-informed. And wouldn't it be a beautiful thing if everyone in a child's life was grief-informed? If their teacher was, if their school counselor was, if their coach of their baseball team was, right? If their youth pastor was, whoever these adults are that are around kids in their life, if all of us were grief informed and knew how to support and navigate kids and families who are grieving, wouldn't that be a beautiful thing? Because the reality is in the United States right now, 1 in 12 kids will have a parent or a sibling die before they turn 18.
Oh my gosh.
And if you think about that percentage, that is why it is truly in a public health situation in our country that we really need people to become grief informed.
Yeah.
So I would encourage everyone to check out all of our resources.
Absolutely. And imagine if we could set it up so that schools, a child in a classroom suffers a loss and that the next day they take 20 minutes to do a snip snapshot of grief-informed care. Like, here's what we're going to say to Johnny. Here's what we're just not going to say to Johnny. And if you don't know what to say, say nothing. Right. Like, I mean, we could do something so simple as that and give these kids the tools to support their little
Absolutely.
Friend.
And give the teachers the tools, right?
Give because the teachers the tools.
I think that teachers, obviously, they're incredible humans who want to support kids and often just don't know. I saw something on social media the other day of a kid whose mom is a grief therapist who said, oh my gosh, mom, you know, they're teaching the 5 stages of grief in class right now. And I don't know what to say because I know it's wrong, but, you know, and they ended up, I think, emailing the teacher and providing additional resources. But, you know, I think teachers are well-intended and all people who are trying to work with and support and help kids are well-intended. So let's get them the tools they need to have those conversations with kids.
Yeah. I mean, even the people who say everything happens for a reason are well-intended.
Absolutely, they are. They are.
That doesn't help. Don't
no,
say that.
No,
or,
do know, not.
Always
say
a silver that. Lining, or there's something to be learned here. Or even the people who say to me, oh, it's so hard, but look at all you've done. And it's like, oh, please stop.
Yeah.
I would cash it in, believe it or not.
Oh,
have
absolutely.
My old life back.
Absolutely.
You know, oh my gosh.
Anything that you're putting out into the world to try to diminish pain in the moment is really not helpful. It's what's really helpful is to validate that pain. Yeah. And sometimes that's just through silence.
Exactly.
Right?
Oh,
sometimes that's just in holding the space and saying, yeah, it really sucks.
Yeah. And I'm here and I'm not turning away.
Yeah.
And you can do whatever you're going to do. And I'm just going to be right here.
Mm-hmm.
On one of the first, like Marley died in September and October, I would just like walk the streets all night. And I had broken ribs and I'm kind of like hobbling along and it's mm-hmm. cold and rainy. And you're just like, I don't even feel what's happening around me. And I mean, it was early, 6 something in the morning. And this woman goes, Sarah, and I look, and it was a former grief counselor who I worked with for years and years. And she, of all people, and God bless her, she was being honest, said, I didn't know what to say.
Oh,
I can't believe I haven't reached out. I just didn't know what to say. And I thought, we're in real trouble.
Yes.
Yeah. If
yeah.
This lovely woman who knows me, wants the best for me, has experience, has walked this path, didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
I mean, stumped.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things that I say to people is if you don't know what to say, say that.
Right.
But say it exactly. Right when you would say something else, right? So you don't know what to say and it is 6 hours, 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months later.
Yeah.
It's perfectly okay to say in that moment, I don't know what to say, but I am here and I care.
Yeah. People really do feel like they need to know what to say. I bet especially to kids.
Yes.
Because it's really scary to tell a kid, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a lot of people about most things, yeah. Your kids come into you with the, I want the answer.
Yeah.
And that's our, we're conditioned to try and give the answer, give
right.
The solution and to just say, I don't know.
It is so hard.
But I think kids might find more comfort in that versus, no, do it this way. And that I can't. So now what's wrong with me?
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, I think I don't know is a really reasonable response to a kid, especially because what we really encourage people is to always tell kids the truth,
mm-hmm.
Right? And so to answer their questions openly and honestly, and obviously at an age appropriate level, but certainly, I don't know the answer to that is an okay question as long as it's the truth, right? Like, speak the truth. And also, I think one of the challenges of supporting kids and teens that are grieving is they are so different, and some kids are going to want to talk about it more, and some kids aren't. And I also think it's okay to check in with kids about that, right? Like, what feels best to you? If you're a parent and you want to help your kid navigate school, for example, what do you want your friends and teachers to know? How do we navigate this together, right? And I think that there are ways to support kids in their own autonomy, which I think so often we forget that kids are smart. They often know the truth, even if we haven't told them. They've picked up on things. You know, we've had kids in our program who, you know, we really encourage families to tell kids the truth. But at times over the years when that hasn't happened, you know, we've had a kid in our program one time who said his father died of carbon monoxide poisoning in the car. And he said, my dad died because he killed himself, but don't tell my mom. She thinks it was a car accident.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Weight of the world.
Yeah.
Weight of the world.
Yep. Yeah. So let's do it differently.
Let's do it differently. And so, you know, I think one thing I hear, I can only imagine you guys hear it all the time, is I don't know if my kid's grieving right. He won't, she won't, mm-hmm. they won't talk about it mm-hmm. with me. They're just marching on with their life. I'm worried they're not processing this. Mm-hmm. How do I know if they're processing this? And I mean, I know you're not a clinician, Brennan, but like, right. do you guys have a approach for, here's when we know we're sliding into dangerous territory, outside of the obvious, you know, self-harm, suicidal ideations, that type of thing. What else could parents be looking for to say, okay, this is off the bell-shaped curve. This is not their unique grief experience.
Sure. Yeah. And thank you for acknowledging. I'm not a clinician. I'm a griever and I'm an administrator and I do a lot of wonderful things.
And a superhero.
Well, no, thank you. But we have an incredible program team that does the more, you know, those aspects of Dougie Center. And what I would also say is that, you know, we answer over 25,000 calls a year.
Oh my gosh.
And from folks who just have questions. And so certainly, we are available for those questions,
wow.
right? If a parent has questions, please reach out to Dougie Center. That's what we're here for. But what I would say is that I think one of the things I would encourage parents to realize is that your kids don't have to be seemingly struggling in order to get them support, right? So great example is peer support or camps, right? I think camps are great too. Your son ended up Camp Courage was his favorite camp. And that says something, even if maybe you didn't think he needed it, right?
He wasn't hiding under the covers every day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? And so I would encourage parents to seek out peer support in any way, even if you don't think your kids are struggling. Certainly, there are times when kids struggle and you don't know. And that's important. And we know that. And so how do we keep an eye on things? And also, you know, I think open communication is so important. But kids sometimes aren't going to communicate about things. So getting supports and resources in place, we have a ton of resources, free resources on our website for parents, tip sheets, our podcast, which Grief Out Loud, which is a great resource, and your podcast. And then what I would also say is, you know, what you want to, of course, keep an eye on is the kids that aren't engaging in their life ever, because kids do dip in and out of grief. That is a really normal thing. So you might see a kid one day who's really grieving and very outwardly having grief reactions and then seemingly fine the next day. And it doesn't necessarily mean they're not grieving or they're not thinking about it. It's just normal for kids to kind of dip in and out. And so if you're seeing struggles all day, every day, certainly that is a time when I would encourage folks to reach out to someone who can provide support. And if you do reach out to a therapist, I would certainly ensure that they're grief informed.
I love that. Yeah, exactly. And it kind of brings us back to the other point, which is oftentimes kids aren't going to share these vulnerabilities around their grief experience with a parent or adult caregiver who shares the same loss.
Yes.
Out of fear of upsetting the parent,
right,
or adult caregiver. So getting them in front of people who they need not be so afraid,
yeah,
of upsetting,
yeah,
that's not part of the equation,
yeah,
I think is probably pretty key.
Absolutely. I think that's super key. And if you can't come up with that, then I also think, you know, there's kids that maybe sports are an outlet, and there can be coaches that kind of play that role of somebody who can be a listening ear or just keep an eye on things. Music, creativity, art, there's so many ways that kids express themselves. Kids often use other tools as their language in addition to talking.
And they might not be putting those pieces together in their young minds necessarily.
Exactly.
We just have to trust that process is occurring.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, Brennan and I had this beautiful outline. I just wonder, Brennan, did we...
We didn't look at it once.
We did not.
Okay. I think we did a good job. But, you know, one of the most exciting things I would think for you, this is projection, is that you had that TEDx experience. Was it so cool?
Oh, it was such an honor to be asked.
Yeah.
And so cool to
and
be
the process
able to.
Leading up to. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I worked with an amazing coach and getting to share different aspects of my story than I typically do. You know, I share my story a lot and getting to share a few different aspects and to also really talk about grief and, you know, some of the things we've already talked about, grief being a lifelong journey, and that grief is not just this singular emotional experience. It is really a physical, behavioral, spiritual, cognitive experience. It's all things. And getting to talk about that to a larger audience is awesome.
And do you get nervous speaking in front of larger audiences?
Yes, yeah. I think the Keller Auditorium is nerve-wracking for anybody. I would think it's nerve-wracking for anybody, maybe the most seasoned performers. But yeah, no, it's pretty...
Your blood's going to be pumping.
Wild and intense. And yes, absolutely. But also what an opportunity to share a message of grief being transformative and hard and hopeful and, you know, so many different things than maybe the predominant narrative that's happening out in the world.
Yeah. And if we hold all the people who heard you that day and they could only recall one main takeaway, what would you hope that would be?
So TED is based on the concept of ideas worth spreading. And so my idea is grief is to feel, not fix.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I hope is people take that away, that for themselves and others, that the goal isn't to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the goal is to feel it, experience it, journey with it. And if you're able, create meaning for yourself. I think that's not a prescription we can give to others. But I think I've seen so many beautiful ways people have created meaning out of their loss, including, I mean, look at this, right? We're sitting here and you've created meaning out of your loss and grief experiences and are sharing that with the world. Now, it doesn't make it okay, right? It doesn't mean that we wouldn't change it all in a heartbeat. But if it has to be this way, what a wonderful thing to be able for ourselves to create.
Yeah. One of the things I teach a lot is how we can define healing in measurable outcomes that work for us.
Yes.
Because the last thing I want is to compare my grief process to yours or yours to mine. And unless you're out there doing a podcast and on the stage at Keller, then you're not doing enough.
Right.
And I think that's where you were going with, we can't prescribe the meaning for other people.
Right.
But what does it mean to like sort of dissect that and say like, I can still have meaning in my day.
Mm-hmm.
And my most meaningful life is just the life that I'm not surrendering to only sadness.
Yeah.
That I'm integrating this experience into how I live my life. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the ticket. And for you, for me, it looks like this. And for other people, it means that they don't lose their job, or that they continue to be parents to their living children, or that they have a meltdown with their parent that says, I need help, I need more. You know, those are all very meaningful ways of living with your reality.
Absolutely. 100%. And again, it's so different for each person, and honoring that and your differences, that does not mean that you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Brennan. Thank you so much. I could sit here and talk to you in your beautiful home all day long. But you've got things to do, places to go, a busy day. And I just can't thank you enough for carving this time out for us.
Oh, I've been more than happy to do it. It's wonderful to talk with you. And I just always hope that my story can help somebody just a little bit.
Yeah. You know? Oh, you helped me today. That's for sure. Oh, so well, mission accomplished. Check out the Dougie Center, D-O-U-G-Y Center out of Portland. They've got a ton of resources, a ton of ways that you can get support, ideas, connections in your own community. Obviously, check us out at clearmorning.org, and we will talk to you guys next time. Thanks, Brennan.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Enduring Grief, Healing Practices and True Stories of Living After Loss. We hope today's conversation brought you comfort, understanding, or simply the assurance that you're not alone in your grief. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone who might need to hear it, and subscribe as a way to stay connected. We'll be back next week with more personal stories and practical guidance for navigating the complexities of loss. Until then, take care of yourself, and remember, there's no right or wrong way to grieve. You have the freedom to mourn in the way that feels true to you.